On this first track, I am going to explain how the techniques I use help you to become a very happy non-smoker. We will cover every aspect of hypnosis, and by the time we get to the end of this track, you will know exactly how you can become a non-smoker and how easy that can be. Over the years, there have been many papers written by some of the most educated minds in the medical world stating that nicotine is one of the most addictive substances known to man. Now, I'm just a humble hypnotherapist who says to you that nicotine is not an addictive substance at all. Now, to make such a bold statement as that, I need to back it up with some reasons why that I can make such a statement. Let me explain. Most smokers believe that they are addicted to nicotine. It is a very common belief, a belief that is mainly fueled by drug companies. It is so important to drug companies that you believe you are addicted. Because if you truly believe that, then how on earth are you going to be able to stop? You will have to try some form of nicotine replacement therapy, like patches or gum or inhalers, which earns the drug companies billions of pounds every year. Your own GP will recommend patches because that's what they're told to do. If nicotine is an addictive substance, then why don't patches work for everyone? If people believe that their body requires nicotine to function each day, then why, when they have a patch on their arm, do most people still want to have a cigarette? What a lot of people don't realise is that an average 24-hour patch, which seems to be the most popular patch people try, contains more nicotine than 16 packets of Benson & Hedges Gold, as an example. That's right, one 24-hour patch is equal to 16 packets of cigarettes. So if you believe, getting back to that word again, that your body needs nicotine to function, then by putting that patch on, you're getting more nicotine into your bloodstream in one go than you have ever had in your life. Yet most people still want a cigarette. Now, if nicotine is an addictive substance, how can you manage to sleep through the night without wanting a cigarette? That would mean that you're only addicted during the day. How do you manage to spend several hours on an aeroplane without killing the person next to you? This will all be explained later on. The bottom line is that nicotine is not an addictive substance, but the truth is what you believe. Now, if you compare nicotine to a true addictive substance, such as heroin, for example, if a heroin addict doesn't get regular amounts of heroin every day, they experience sweats, shakes, heart palpitations, nausea, vomiting, hallucinations, real physical withdrawal symptoms. If you don't have a cigarette for a few hours, you probably get a bit grumpy, a bit agitated. You may even bite your nails. You don't start shaking, vomiting, or hallucinating. You experience psychological reactions to not having a cigarette, not physical withdrawal symptoms. Now, a heroin addict can't even sleep through the night without their body waking them up regularly for more heroin. The ones that can are also alcoholics. And for them, the alcohol numbs their senses, so they get a great night's sleep. But when they wake up in the morning, they have to take their heroin they didn't take during the night before they can function that day. You don't wake up in the morning and have to smoke several cigarettes because you didn't smoke any during the 7 or 8 hours that you were asleep. You will start smoking at the same time each morning and probably smoke at very similar times during the day because that's what you do. Smoking is a habit, but an incredibly strong habit, because you do it at virtually the same times each day. That's what a habit is. And it is easy to break habits once you make the decision that that's what you want to do. We will look more deeply into habits and how they are formed later on this track. Now, over the years, I seem to hear the same excuses as to why people smoke and why they can't stop. When I ask people why they smoke, the majority of people tell me that it helps them to deal with stress. Then I get a large number who tell me that it helps them to relax. And finally, I hear that the reason why some of them can't stop is because they have no willpower. So let's deal with each one separately. Firstly, stress. You don't have a very stressful day and smoke 100 cigarettes, and then have a day where everything goes wonderfully well without a care in the world, and you don't smoke any. You tend to smoke what you smoke, and usually at the same times each day. I understand there can be a variance in the numbers depending on how you're feeling, but nothing in direct relation to the stress you feel you're under at any given time. It's just a cop-out. I had a friend many years ago who wanted to stop smoking, and he went to a hypnotherapist to help him stop. The hypnotherapist asked him why he smoked, and he said that he had a very, very stressful job Monday to Friday, that he had lots of meetings, reports, and a lot of pressure and deadlines, and it helped him to deal with that stress. When the hypnotherapist asked him why he wanted to stop, he said that he had two young boys and he was worried about the long-term health for himself and the effect it was having on his boys, and he wanted to be around to see them grow up. The hypnotherapist asked him if he got stressed at the weekends at all. Well, he said that he loved the weekends because he was at home with the kids. He loved that time. It was a great time. He didn't feel stressed at all. Then he was asked if he smoked at the weekend. And he said that he did, and he was smoking about 30 a day. Wow, thought the hypnotherapist, you're at home relaxing with the kids and the family, and you're smoking 30 cigarettes a day. The obvious question now was, how many cigarettes did he smoke during the week under this stressful, pressured job that he had? To which he replied, 30 a day. He then actually remembered that he had been on holiday that summer, lying on a beach in the sun for 2 weeks without a care in the world. He was still smoking 30 cigarettes a day. As previously stated, you don't have a stressful day and smoke 100 cigarettes, and then have a day where everything goes perfectly smoothly and you don't smoke any. Stress is just an excuse, a reason created by your conscious mind as to why you do it and why you can't stop. Now we're going to look at the situation where people tell me that it helps them to relax. When people tell me that, I always think it's quite funny, because most people I see in my clinic smoke between 20 and 40 cigarettes a day. So those who smoke that many, by the end of every day, they should be comatose. They should be completely out of it. But those people are more stressed at the end of a day than when they begin. Smoking does not help you to relax, as nicotine is a stimulant. It's a poison that grows in tobacco plants. Think about the last time you've left it in an abnormally long period of time since you've had a cigarette, and you have that first one again. You feel a bit lightheaded. You feel that bit of a rush. That's because the nicotine gets back into your bloodstream and it gets pumped around to your heart. Your heart recognises it immediately as a poison, and it doesn't want it in your system, so it tries to get rid of it. The only thing your heart can do to make that happen is it increases its heart rate, normally by about 10 beats per minute. It tries to pump it out, so immediately your body starts to race. Then in the tobacco smoke, you have a number of cancer-producing agents, which are very strong stimulants. Then add that to a cup of tea or coffee with caffeine that you may have if you were relaxing, and you have a large number of really powerful stimulants rushing through your body at one go. Are you relaxed? No. It's physically and medically impossible to smoke and relax. But yet again, we get back to that incredibly powerful word, belief. If you believe that they are helping you to relax, and you believe that strongly enough, then guess what happens when you smoke? Yes, you feel relaxed, because that is what you expect to happen. Now we're going to look at willpower. Most smokers believe they have no willpower. So guess what happens when they try to stop smoking? Yeah, they fail miserably. Well, I'm here to tell you that you have got bundles of willpower. You couldn't get out of bed in the morning if you didn't have willpower. You wouldn't hold down a job, mow the grass, take out the rubbish. Nobody enjoys doing these kind of things, but they do it because they have to. You wouldn't do half the things you do in your life if you didn't have any willpower. Now, you could give up smoking right now with nothing but willpower if I explain how. If I told you that I was going to get a sniper to follow you round for the rest of your life, and if you light up just one cigarette, he's going to blow your head off, would you smoke? No, of course you wouldn't, because your life would depend on it. Well, guess what? Your life does depend on it. The only difference between that story and reality is time, because sooner or later, cigarettes will contribute to your death one way or the other. So take comfort from knowing that you have that incredibly powerful willpower inside you. You just need some help to bring it out. Now, one of the most powerful words in our lives is belief. And if that belief has a specific expectation, in other words, if we believe and expect something strongly enough, then whatever it is that we believe is very likely to come true. So if you believe that it will be hard to stop smoking because of all the stories that you've heard from friends or work colleagues, or you've tried to stop in the past, then guess what happens when you try? Yes, it was murder. You really struggled. You couldn't stop thinking about cigarettes. You've probably experienced this yourself already. I want to look at the placebo effect now and how that affects your world. The placebo effect has been recognised by the medical profession for many years. In a trial to test the value of a surgical procedure to treat angina pectoris, the placebo procedure consisted of anaesthetising the patient and only cutting his skin. The thus fictitiously treated patients showed an 80% improvement, while those actually operated upon only 40%. In other words, placebo acted better than surgery. Similarly, the placebo effect accounts for up to 50% of improvement in depressed patients taking antidepressants. So what counts is the reality present in the brain, not the pharmacological one of the pharmacist or even the real conditions of the environment. Many believe the placebo effect is psychological, due to either a real effect caused by belief or to a subjective delusion. If I believe the pill will help, it will help. The psychological theory is that it's all in your mind. But even in animals, several environmental stimuli can unite to each other, forming a chain. Any of those stimuli can act as a sign and turn the conditioned reflex on. The bottom line here is that when people believe that the so-called medication that they are given will help their condition, and they believe that strongly enough, and they expect their condition to improve, then guess what happens? In so many cases, it does. The human mind is so incredibly powerful that it can cause many changes in our world, physically and mentally. Now, I want to explain in detail how your mind works. You have two parts to your mind, the conscious part and the unconscious part. Now, there is a barrier that separates both of these parts of your mind, and it's medically known as the critical faculty. It is there to protect everything in the deep unconscious part of your mind, a part of your mind that you don't even know is there. But as you are listening to my voice, that part of your mind is controlling your breathing, because you're not consciously thinking that you need to take a breath every few seconds. It is done for you automatically. It controls your blood flow, the functions of your internal organs. It's the automatic part of your life. It is also referred to as the autonomic nervous system. It's keeping you alive, and it does this automatically every second of your life. Now, consciously, you can be aware of about 5 or 6 different things at the same time. Now let's do an experiment. As you're now listening to my voice, I want you to become aware of your bottom, making contact with the chair that you're sitting on. That's the first thing I want you to become aware of. Then become aware of your feet, making contact with the floor. That's 2. But I want you to hold that thought at the same time as being aware of the contact with your bottom on the chair. Then I want you to add the awareness of the colours of the walls around you. That's 3. Then any other items that you can see in the room, I want you to become aware of them all at the same time. Now, you're probably struggling by now. I get to 5 things at the same time and I start to get a pain in the side of my eyes. Now, your unconscious mind can process around 3 million different thoughts every second of your life. And it does this automatically. That's how powerful your unconscious mind is. Now, the conscious part of your mind is where you are right now as you are listening to my voice. It's the part of your mind that you act with, think with, make everyday decisions with. It's the part that controls your willpower. It's the rational, logical part of you. It's the part of your mind that makes excuses as to why you can't do certain things, like stopping smoking. It's the part that you believe is in control of your life. If it was the part in control of your life, then you would just simply stop smoking. Or if you were scared of spiders, you'd just simply decide that I'm not going to be scared of spiders anymore. And if you wanted to lose weight, you'd just simply make the decision that you're going to start losing weight, because you're in control of your life. You would simply say to yourself that you're fed up with all of these things that you're not happy about, and you change, especially with regards to smoking, because you know it's destroying your health. It's wasting money. It's antisocial. It smells horrible. It gives you a cough or asthma, and you just simply stop. You would also change other parts of your life that you're not happy with, because you are supposedly in control of your life. All of these things are not controlled in the conscious part of your mind. They are controlled in the unconscious part. Now we will look at the unconscious part of your mind. And in this part, there is a lot of stuff going on. But we will only deal with the parts relevant to you stopping smoking. The first part is memories. All of your memories are stored in the unconscious part of your mind. Everything you have seen, heard, touched, experienced, and all of the emotions connected to that event are stored in this part of your mind. We know this through regression with hypnosis. We can take a client back to a very early period in their life, and they can relive an event again as if it's actually happening for the first time. They can bring back every single detail, as if they're actually there. It's a very powerful experience to observe. So we know everything is in there, but what we don't have is conscious access to those memories. You can't sit there now and think, what happened on the 10th of September 1979, and bring back every detail of that particular time. But if that particular date and time was relevant to your problem, then you could bring back every single detail. Your mind would go back to that time. Now, emotions. Emotions are also controlled in the unconscious part of your mind. You don't wake up in the morning and think to yourself, do you know, I've been really miserable for the last few days. I'm going to be in really great form today and everyone's going to think I'm absolutely marvellous. If we did have conscious control over our emotions, then if you were at home one Saturday with a really miserable face, feeling really fed up generally, and we all feel like that at times, your wife or partner could turn around to you and say, why are you so miserable? Why the long face? Don't you know that there are people in the world a lot worse off than you? Snap out of it. Pull yourself together. You'd then think to yourself, do you know, they're absolutely right. So I'm now going to be really, really happy and smiley. Go ahead and try it. The next time you aren't feeling particularly great, just try to suddenly feel happy. It doesn't work. We don't have conscious control over how we feel every day. Those feelings are controlled in the unconscious part of our minds. Now, habits. Habits are stored and controlled in the unconscious part of your mind. A habit is something that you do usually at the same times each day, and are usually connected to specific things that happen each day. You form many habits throughout your life: tying your shoelaces, the way you make a cup of tea, the way you put your shoes on or your socks. Habits are formed through repetition and association. If you do something often enough consciously, your unconscious mind says, well, it's obviously important to you that this happens fairly regularly, so I'll take over that function so you can get on with other things. If you are a driver, do you remember your first driving lesson? There were so many things that you had to remember. You had to make sure that the car was in neutral before you start the engine. You had to put the clutch in to select first gear. Then you had to let the clutch out very slowly and at the same time press the accelerator down slowly. Now, if you did that too quickly, you would jolt the car. If you did it too slowly, you would stall the car. Now, once you can get that balancing act right, you then need to release the handbrake so that the car can move. Now, because the car is moving, you have to make sure there's nothing coming. So do you look in the door mirror, the interior mirror? Do you look over your left shoulder, your right shoulder? There is so much to think about, so much to remember, and it all takes conscious thought. Then as time goes by, you have more and more lessons. You become much better at driving, and at some point you pass your test. These actions at some point, and nobody ever knows when this happens, passes from being a conscious process to remember all of these actions to an unconscious habit. it passes into the automatic part of your mind. You no longer have to think about driving, you will do it automatically. The next time you go out in your car, at no point during that journey will you be thinking about driving the car, thinking about changing gear, or putting the clutch in each time. You will be thinking about what's going on tonight. You mustn't forget to buy some milk because you're low on it. You must remember to ring Pete to arrange that game of golf. You've got to send that letter to the bank about the loan. You're going to be thinking about everything else that's going on in your life other than what you're doing. Wow, that's quite amazing. How can you do all of those things without even being aware of what you're doing? Easy. You have programmed the unconscious part of your mind. You set up that program during the process of learning to drive, and that programming continued even after you passed your test. It is now an automatic part of your life, and you will never forget how to do it. Once something passes from the conscious to the unconscious part of your mind, you will never forget it. It's part of how you are. Could you imagine driving down the road at 60 miles an hour and then forgetting how to drive? Could you imagine swimming in the sea and then suddenly forgetting how to swim? That would never happen. Remember that great expression that it's just like riding a bike. You never forget because it's programmed. When you first started smoking, you didn't smoke as many cigarettes as you do today. If, like 99% of my clients, when you first started smoking, you probably smoked one cigarette as and when you could get hold of it. Each time in those early years when you smoked those cigarettes, you made a conscious decision that that's what you wanted to do. As time went by, you smoked more cigarettes. You became quite good at it. And at some point, and again a smoker never knows when this happens, it passed from being a conscious decision to have each cigarette to an unconscious habit. You no longer have to think about smoking, you just do it. First thing in the morning with a cup of tea or coffee, or maybe sitting out in the garden if you don't smoke in your home, you don't consciously think to yourself, do you know what, I really fancy having a cigarette, what a good idea. You just automatically have one. There is no thought process. Most of my clients don't even remember lighting it. They just do it. We have very powerful associations that we form between the habits and specific situations in our lives. When you are driving in your car and the person in front suddenly does an emergency stop, you don't look at the back of their car and think, crikey, I'd better stop or I'm going to crash into the back of them. Because by the time you thought that, you would have hit them. You immediately stop the car. You respond to the situation that you find yourself in. Now, let's say that you have been out one evening for a lovely meal with your partner. You've had a few drinks, so your partner's driving home. Now, during that part of the journey, an animal runs out in front of the car. Immediately, your right foot hits the footwell in front of you. Now, you had no control over that happening. There was no conscious thought process. If there was, it would have meant that when the animal ran out in front of the car, you would have thought to yourself consciously, crikey, an animal ran out in front of the car. I'd better hit that piece of carpet in the footwell in front of me. Well, let's face it, that would be pretty stupid. The reaction to hit that piece of carpet is instinctive. It is triggered by the deep part of your mind. It's helping you to deal with that situation. Now, when is your first cigarette in the day? When you get up in the morning with a cup of tea or coffee, or on your way to work in the car or the van? You probably smoke during your tea breaks in the morning or lunchtime, or when the phone rings or when you're at home, or when you're out socialising with friends with a beer or a glass of wine, or even after a meal. Whatever specific situations you associate with having a cigarette, you do that automatically. There is no conscious thought process that takes place. During our one-to-one sessions in my clinic and on the Stop Smoking CD that you're going to listen to, I break all of the associations with specific times in the day and having a cigarette. So there will be no time of the day where you will automatically think about having a cigarette. It will be the last thing on your mind. Now, let's look at imagination. I could write a whole book just about imagination because it is so incredibly powerful. I call it the key to your unconscious mind. It is the key to making changes in how people behave and react to events and circumstances. If you imagine something strongly enough in your mind especially when you are relaxed, your body will physically change. Now, that's a very powerful statement to make, and I never make such bold statements without being able to give examples to back those statements up. Now, a great example of this is a nightmare. Have you ever had a nightmare? Some of my clients who have had the really bad kind of nightmares, the kind that you wake up in the middle of the night, sitting bolt upright in bed, where they're sweating, shaking, out of breath, their hearts pounding out of their chest. It's like they've been running for miles to get away from something. Why do they feel like that? They've been lying motionless in bed for 4 or 5 hours. Why are they sweating, shaking, breathless? Because in their mind, they have imagined that dream so vividly that their body has accepted it, that it must have actually happened. Now, as you sit there, think about a time or a situation in the past where you had to do something or say something to somebody, or think of any situation that really made you feel uncomfortable. Take a moment to really think about it. See what you saw, hear what you heard, feel what you felt, feel how you felt. And the more you think about it, the more uncomfortable you start to feel. You get that unpleasant feeling in the pit of your stomach. That is how your imagination changes how you physically feel. Now, think about a time when you hear one of your favourite music tracks from the past, when you were young. When you suddenly hear it on the radio, you suddenly feel good. You remember all the things that were happening at that time, all the emotions. Now, during my sessions with my clients, I get them to use their imagination a lot. Sometimes people say to me that they don't have a good imagination. And I say to them, close your eyes and imagine what your house looks like. Or if you have a car, can you imagine a picture of your car in your mind? And they say, yes, of course. Well, then they have a good imagination. Because imagination is having a picture of something in your mind. I give you the pictures and you imagine them. Now, if during hypnosis you imagine in your mind that it will be hard to stop smoking, then you're absolutely right. It will be murder. If you imagine that it will be easy to stop, because of your motivation and commitment and the reasons why it's important for you to stop, then it will be so simple. You wish you would have done it years ago. You will determine how you will be at the end of a session by what's going on in your mind when you are in hypnosis. Focus on positive. Get positive focus in your mind. If you focus on negative things, you will get negative responses. If you imagine it will be hard, you're right. If you imagine it will be easy, you're right. It's up to you. The Stop Smoking track is as close as it gets to having a one-to-one session with me. The language and techniques are exactly the same as I use in my clinic. Now we're going to look at the protection part of your mind. This part of your mind is your protection mechanism. Every human being who has ever lived and will ever live has this part to their mind. It has two functions and responsibilities in every one of us. It is there to protect us from physical pain and emotional harm. Now, the emotional harm part is if you have ever experienced any form of deep trauma in your life, it can be the loss of a loved one, the breakup of a relationship after a number of years, or the loss of a job after a number of years, but something that truly hurts deep down inside. Well, this part of your mind will take that bad feeling and it will lock it away very, very deep in your mind. So you will have little or no recollection of it at all. It doesn't want you to feel bad about anything. It gets rid of the bad stuff so you can move on with your life. The physical pain part is if you're crossing a road and a lorry suddenly came round a corner, you wouldn't stand there and say to yourself, crikey, I think I need to get out of the way, I'm going to get run over. By the time you thought all of that, you would have been hit. You immediately respond to the situation and you get out of the way. The protection part of your mind will never let anything happen to you. Its sole job and responsibility is to look after you in every aspect of your life. Now, everybody who smokes starts for a specific reason. They are trying to deal with something that they're not comfortable with, something that's going on in their life at that time. And there is no exception to this. The majority of people start through peer pressure, or to fit in to a social group, whether it's at work or out of work. We go through a socialisation period in our lives from the age of about 10 to 20, where we want to fit in, we want to belong, we want to feel part of something. It's very important to us as human beings. Now, most people who started smoking years ago felt that it would make them look more confident, or older, or sophisticated, and it was even viewed as a social thing to do. However, times have changed, and smoking is becoming more and more antisocial. It's getting harder and harder to find places to smoke. Now, let me ask you this. Did you enjoy your first cigarette? Can you remember your first cigarette? Did you enjoy it? Of course you didn't. Nobody does. If cigarette smoking was down to the taste, then nobody would go past their second cigarette. But it's not about the taste of a cigarette at the beginning that's important. It's about how you feel deep down inside, in the unconscious part of your mind, emotionally. When you had your first cigarette, you probably felt sick, dizzy. You may have felt a burning sensation in the roof of your mouth. Your eyes may have felt sore with the smoke going directly into them. These were all physical feelings. But smoking is not about how you feel physically at the beginning. It's about how you feel deep down inside. Physically, you felt terrible. Emotionally, you felt fantastic because you now fit in. You now belong. You've done it. Your social life's fantastic because all your friends who smoke are calling you up and you're going out to the shops, down to the park, to the cinema. Life is great. You've really made it. What you did at the very beginning when you started to smoke is you programmed the protection part of your mind that smoking is the most fantastic thing to do. Because look at how you now feel about yourself. You look so good. Now let me ask you this question, and please answer it honestly. What have you done every time in your life over the years when you have felt sad, lonely, unhappy, bored, stressed, under pressure, miserable? What's the first thing that you've done? Yes, that's right. You've had a cigarette. Why? Because the unconscious part of your mind says, go on, have a cigarette. You know you'll always feel better when you have a cigarette. Because that's how you programmed it at the beginning. When you first started smoking, as you sit there now, the unconscious part of your mind thinks that smoking is the most fantastic thing to do. Some clients tell me that they feel like they have a battle going on in their mind, that there's one part that really wants to stop and another part that just won't let it happen. And they're absolutely right. That's why in the past, consciously you wanted to stop smoking, but unconsciously that part just won't let it happen. Now, there's a little voice, a little dialogue that goes on in your mind. The unconscious part will say, well, if I allow you to stop smoking, because obviously that's the part controlling it, then what am I going to do in the future if every time you feel sad, unhappy, or bored, or stressed, or under pressure, or you feel miserable, how am I going to deal with those situations? Well, the conscious part can't answer that question because it's not his responsibility to deal with those things. So he replies, well, I just don't know. Do something else. Well, the unconscious part will say, well, unless I know how I'm going to deal with those situations in the future, why on earth would I allow you to stop smoking? Because at the moment, smoking helps you in all of these areas of your life. Now, what I do on the stop smoking track and with my clients is I go through and I break through the barrier that separates the two parts of your mind with hypnosis, with your permission, and I communicate directly with that protection part of your mind. Yes, that's right. That's exactly what I do. And it's not hard. It is not some amazing ability that I've been blessed with. It's just that I know how your mind works. In fact, so do you now, having listened to this so far. I will point out to that protection part of your mind that I understand that up until the day you're listening to the CD, I understand it's doing what it's been doing for what it believes is the right reasons. It's helping you to deal with things in your life. That's its job. But when I point out to that part of your mind that by actually allowing you to continue to smoke, that it will potentially kill you sooner or later, it's going to contribute to that happening, that part of your mind will disconnect the habit. It will not allow you to do anything that will put yourself in harm or danger. That's not its job. Its sole purpose and responsibility in your life is to look after and protect you. It's part of how we're made as human beings. A client once said to me, "Is that the part of my mind that when I walk past a building site and some bricks start to fall off the roof, is that the part of my mind that makes me put my hands up to protect myself?" I said, "That's absolutely right." I then asked him, "Could you imagine walking past that building site when those bricks start to fall and you don't put your hands up?" "Of course you would automatically put your hands up. It's instinctive. You would and will always do it automatically. It's the part of your mind that puts your hands up that will also disconnect the habit of smoking once it understands that it will potentially kill you. Once it understands that cigarette smoking is deadly, it will totally revise its primary functioning and it will change. When that happens, we will then have both the conscious and the unconscious part of your minds working together as a team, and our job is done. It doesn't matter how many cigarettes you smoke or how many years you've been smoking. The key to stopping every smoker smoking is simply to re-educate the protection part of their mind." I even stopped someone smoking on the phone once. For him, the protection part just suddenly understood, having listened to my explanation of what I do and how I do it. He just got the picture. In fact, all of you will know people who have just stopped smoking just like that. For them, they just seem to get it. Now I want to look at what happens on stage shows. I've always found it frustrating when I ask my clients, "What do you know about hypnosis?" And in the majority of cases, I get the same response. They say things like, "Well, I've seen those stage shows," or "I've been to see a stage hypnotist before." And these people believe that the hypnotist has control over those people. Well, that couldn't be further from the truth. Hypnosis can't make you do anything that you don't want to do, but it is the most incredibly powerful tool to help you to do what you do want to do. If hypnosis could make you do anything, then we would have no wars in the world, because all the hypnotherapists would hypnotise the dictators and the drug barons, and we would tell them to give up all of their money to all the poor countries of the world. So we wouldn't have thousands of children dying every day of starvation. Now, who volunteers to go on stage with a stage hypnotist? People who are exhibitionists, show-offs, people who like to be the centre of attention. They know that they're going to be expected to do stupid, embarrassing things. That's why they volunteered. So they're up for it. If hypnosis could make you do anything, I wouldn't be doing this for a living, because I would go into my local NatWest branch, and I apologise if you're a NatWest customer or work for NatWest, and I'd hypnotise a girl behind the counter, and I'd tell her to fill up my bag full to the brim with used 20 and 50 pound notes. And once she's done it, I'd tell her to go in and raise the cameras and forget I came in. And I'd probably be living in Barbados today. Hypnosis can't make you do anything that you're not prepared to do. Now, during a session of hypnosis, people have got certain expectations. Most people expect to fall asleep. Now, that's very unusual. I've only ever had 3 people over the years who have actually fallen asleep during a session. But it doesn't matter if you fall asleep, because when you enter that first level of sleep, called the beta brainwave state, you can still hear what is being said. It's when you get to the next level, the alpha state, sometimes mixed with a delta brainwave, that you enter what most people understand as normal sleep. And in those circumstances, the session would have to be stopped, as the client couldn't hear anything that was being said, and no changes could take place for them. Most people expect to feel hypnotised, but there is no feeling of being hypnotised. It doesn't exist. At no point when you're listening to your track will you feel hypnotised. Clients are always aware and in control every moment of the session. And should an emergency arise, then they would be able to deal with it in a safe and secure manner. I had a lady once who came in for her session, and I usually ask people to turn off their mobile phones when they come in, but I didn't ask her to because I didn't see one. Halfway through the session, I heard a phone ringing. And without prompting, she sat up in the chair. She reached into a pocket, pulled out her mobile phone and switched it off, then put it back in her pocket and fell into deep hypnosis again. Now, had I been filming that particular session for training purposes, I could have given her the instruction to do all of those things. Then I could have said, when I snap my fingers, you will go back into deep hypnosis. But I didn't have to do that, because she was in control. She knew she had to turn off her phone. She knew she had to go back into deep hypnosis so we could continue with the session. And that's exactly what happened. She was in control, but I could have made it look as if it was me, couldn't I? Now let's look at some examples of hypnosis that you experience every day of your life. You experience hypnosis many times every day. You may be stopped at a set of traffic lights and then you hear someone blowing their horn behind you because the lights have changed and you weren't aware of it. Your mind actually drifted off somewhere and you weren't aware of what was happening around you. Can you remember driving your car on a journey, one that you make probably fairly frequently, and as you're going along, you get that feeling that you can't remember that last 10 or 20 minutes of the journey. You're there before you realise it. That's a kind of hypnosis. Your mind wanders off and you're driving across road junctions, traffic lights, high streets, even motorways, and you have no recollection of that part of the journey. How can you do that without even being aware of what you're doing? It's easy. The protection part of your mind realises that the conscious part of your mind has wandered off, and it takes over and it drives the car through everything you come up against, and it does it automatically. Remember, its sole responsibility in your life is to protect and look after you, both physically and mentally. It can't do anything else. It is not there for any other purpose. Now, God forbid, should a child run out in front of your car whilst your mind has wandered off, don't worry, because the unconscious part will stop the car automatically and then bring back your conscious part. And then you'll be thinking, wow, that was close. What happened there? I want you to understand that every time that happens in the future, and it will happen thousands of times for the rest of your life, not to worry, because you are in the safest possible hands you could ever be in. It's like having your own SAS chauffeur, whose sole responsibility is to protect you in every way. Now, there are four ways to respond to suggestions in hypnosis. The first way to respond is I could say something to you like, you now hate cigarettes. They're vile, filthy, disgusting. They smell. You want them out of your life. Well, it's vitally important that you agree with all of those suggestions. If you don't think these things about cigarettes, then you really shouldn't be listening to the CD. Now, the second way to respond is that I could say all of those things to you, and you could be thinking, well, I do want to stop, but I don't really think they're vile or filthy or disgusting. And if this is the case, then it would be very unlikely that we would be successful, as you're not agreeing with all the suggestions given. Now, the third way to respond is that you could be unmotivated to be listening to the CD. You could be listening to it maybe because someone has bought it for you as a present, or you've had pressure from other people to stop. And if that's the case, again, I would guarantee that you will fail. Therefore, it would be a waste of time listening to the CD. Hypnosis does not work for third parties. It does not work because somebody else wants you to stop. It only works if it is what you want for you, and you must want it badly. Finally, the fourth way to respond, and this is what we call the most sneaky way, is I could say all of those things to you that I've already mentioned, that they're vile and filthy and disgusting, and you could be listening to this track and thinking to yourself, well, I've tried patches and gum and inhalers and I've had no success, so I really hope this is going to work for me today. Well, that's a total waste of time. That is not enough commitment and attitude. That is not what you go into a session of hypnosis with. In the world of hypnotherapy, the word hope doesn't exist. The reason why is because hope implies failure. You're only hoping it's going to work. We tend to say that hope is a little bit like the twin sister of the word try. We hate the word try. Let's actually do an experiment. Please go and find an object that you can put in front of you. Now what I want you to do is try and pick it up. Go on, try. Well, if you have picked it up, that's not what I asked you to do. I asked you to try. I didn't say pick it up. You can't try to pick something up. You either pick it up or you don't. I don't hope what I do works. I don't try to stop you smoking. I don't hope what I do works because I know it does. Providing you really want to stop smoking and you have good reasons why you want to stop and you do all of the things I ask you to do when you listen to the track, then there is absolutely no reason why you shouldn't achieve the success that you want. Now, just before you listen to your stop smoking track, I need to explain to you that hypnosis is like a contract between two people. My part of the contract is I will make all sorts of suggestions and therapies to you that will allow you to reach a level of hypnosis that will enable you to become a non-smoker very easily, very safely, and very comfortably. Your part of the contract is you must remain as physically still and as mentally passive as you can. You must go along with all my suggestions, expect them to work, want them to work, make them work in your mind. Don't question, don't analyse, don't fight against anything I say to you. Just keep a totally open mind and allow everything to flow in. Now, I will fulfil my part of the contract today. Will you fulfil yours? Great. Then by the time you've listened to the track, you will be a happy non-smoker. Thank you for listening to this track, which has now prepared you for becoming a happy non-smoker for the rest of your life. You now know exactly how you will achieve this simple process.